Welcome to La Liga Weekly. So the Giza from Argentina back the double and the title favourites are off and running with a win. But which Argentinian and which title favourite? Atleti or Sevilla? Or maybe, just maybe, we should consider the possibility that Real Madrid or Barcelona might even win La Liga. After all, they do have lots of good players. Madrid had Benzema, Hazard and Bale up front from the start. Isco, Vinicius, Jovic, Asensio, Rodrigo to come on from the bench. They're not lacking in raw talents, although it must be said that the most impressively revitalised player of all was Manu Garcia of Alavés, who looked 10 years younger than last season. that's one for the hard. Barca were finally able to register Memphis Depay, and then he repaid his boss Gerard Piqué with an assist. Yes, we do seem to have reached the era where footballers are signing other footballers. Jordi Alba is weighing up whether to bring in Sergio Aguero, while Sergio Roberto is considering a deadline day swoop for Harry Kane. Although it turns out that Martin Brathwaite is better than all of them and PSG got the wrong man. Does anybody know anything about football? There was aggro at Balaidos and in a shock development when Valencia met Getafe. We're supposed to pretend we don't like this sort of thing, but I say bring on a red card or five as we had in La Liga this weekend. Although, being frank, Lucas Zidane was sent off for bad goalkeeping, not for headbutting an annoying Italian, which is the family tradition. We're recording this on Monday. It's not an intentional snub to Villarreal, Granada, Elche or Athletic. They play later. It's just that Terry is off to join the Navy tomorrow. So we have to get him while we can.
That's going to leave people wondering what? Some 58 fat, short, bald blokes joining the Navy. Come on.
got to get the staff wherever you can these days, Terry.
I'm actually picking my son up. He's been away, just in case people are wondering what are you talking about.
You're going on the ship, though. You get a ride around on the ship.
Yeah, he's been deployed. We haven't seen him for about 4 months now, and he's returning back. So we're going to see the ship come in on Thursday, and then we get a sail away, a family sail away on his ship. So that'd be good fun. Yes. And then back late Friday night from Plymouth, and then off Saturday morning to Barcelona. So looking forward to it.
After 17 tests. Right, Patreon. Quick reminder for Patreon. It's patreon.com/LTEL. The cheapest one is a Joaquin that you can get for $3 or whatever equivalent in pounds or euros. Thank you to all of the longer standing Patreons as well who paid more and are very generously not all downgraded themselves to the Joaquin level. So that's good. But get involved. We'll be doing some exclusive Patreon stuff. Actually, we might have to leave it till next week because you're away, but we will get into that obviously with exclusive Patreon stuff as we go as well. So should we get into the meat of the weekend? This is a test of our bias, this, because we've got no excuse of going to the top of the league, obviously, because there is no top of the league the first weekend.
Yeah.
All of the title contenders won their opening game. Should we start Friday night? Because that's where it started. So Friday night, the Borderlands Derby, as it's now known. So we had a red card. It was the red card was shown in the third minute. It started off with a little VAR, but it was that seconds into the game, wasn't it?
Thirty seconds
where Guillaume made his challenge, and then we had a VAR over a penalty that Soler scored. Six yellow cards, a red card later for Getafe. Getafe, I think it's fair to say, played the better football, but lost the battle or lost the war.
Yeah, no, I think it was a red card. I have to be honest. I think it was the type of challenge.
Guillaume's. Yeah, yeah.
30 seconds in, he's a centre-back playing in centre-midfield, and he launched himself into a challenge with enthusiasm. He is a young player, but I thought it was dangerous and warranted the red card. So, and credit to the referee. There are a number of referees, a number of people who think, oh, it's so early in the game. For me, I thought it was an obvious red card. So that really did make life difficult for Valencia. They didn't play particularly well, but what we saw clearly was the spirit that Bordalás has instilled in his team right from the off, because to play the whole of the game, and we're talking 30 seconds, most of the players of Valencia hadn't even touched the ball before that red card. So to play practically a whole game with 10 men, the first game of the season, when you're not entirely match fit, match sharp, warm weather. I thought we saw, clear spirit. And they were helped by the fact they did get the penalty in the 11th minute. So they gave them, they didn't have to go chasing the game to try and score a goal. And they had a lead to hang on to. So I was slightly disappointed from Hetafe's point of view, I have to be honest. But I was surprised with the Kabako red card. He got kicked. I thought he got kicked. He did all he could to not make contacts. It was a clumsy challenge, but he wasn't trying to go through the player and make a great deal of contact. And he got kicked. So it was a surprise. But no, a decent win for Valencia. I think we can see when I was talking last week on the podcast about the troubles that they're going to have. It's a small squad, thin squad. Bordalas clearly needs some more quality brought into the team. And importantly as well, numbers. You're looking at players that have been out on loan, haven't been a huge success at Valencia, and now, you know, going to be backup players or regular starters. So I think that tells you all we need to know about Valencia at the moment.
Right, let's crack on then and move on to the next game. Cadiz 1, Levante 1. Morales, oh, I meant to say something about his hair in the intro and I forgot to put it in there. He's too old to dye his hair blonde.
Yep.
Sorry, I know you've been a La Liga favourite over many years. People love him, but no, it's not acceptable. Sorry, too old.
It's like buying
a sports car, Terry. And there comes a point at which you're just too old to look cool in a sports car, and it's the great tragedy. When you're old enough to have saved up and bought one, you're too old. You're too old to pull it off. If you had to name a team that would get a 97th minute equaliser, you'd have said Cadiz, wouldn't you, for almost any weekend?
Yeah, and Levante should have wrapped this game up earlier. I mean, it was a stunning strike by Morales. It really was a classic Morales goal. And Cadiz hung on in there with just the one goal deficit, and Espino with a decent goal in the end. A great excitement in the stadium. As you said, they've always got that spirit. And if they're just the one goal behind, then there's every chance that they will force an equaliser at the end. But it was a tight game, but one that Levante and will be kicking themselves at having gone so long in the game with that lead. They didn't hang on to all 3 points, so just a point picked up. I thought they were pretty comfortable, to be honest. Levante didn't take advantage of the other chances they had. So Cadiz fought well to get back an equaliser.
Yeah, but they had 43% of possession. I looked it up because that's quite a lot of the ball, isn't it, for Cadiz? But it's a very Cadiz kind of result, isn't it, to be the worst team and yet actually come away with a half-decent result for the opening weekend. Takes us on to Alaves 1, Real Madrid 4. So, I mean, Real Madrid with all their forwards fit is one remarkable achievement, isn't it? We haven't seen that very often in recent times. And we were talking in the preview last week, you know, that they could start the season. Benzema, Bale, Hazard, a brilliant front three. A little rusty in the first half, but they won the game because they had so much quality.
Yes, and Benzema, people are going to say they're going to depend on Benzema, but he's the centre forward, so they should depend on the centre, the main striker to be getting the goals. We've seen glimpses in the past, haven't we, of the understanding between Hazard and Benzema. Obviously, because of Benzema's injury issues, it hasn't been on a prolonged basis.
Hazard.
So I think that seeing them at the weekend, and I thought Bale was more than adequate. So you're right. I mean, we're looking at the three genuine world-class players. Or they have been. And Ancelotti might just think he is the right manager to give a bit of faith, to show confidence in those two players. And it's logical, isn't it, surely, for any manager to think, well, if I've got those three, if I can get them firing, if I can keep them fit, that makes us a far better team. So I thought in the second half, their quality really shone through. Alaves, to their credit in the first half, put up a really good fight. But I think in the second half, we clearly saw it. I ticked off a list of players that I thought played well. And in the first game of the season, in a tricky game at Alaves, when recent history tells you that Real Madrid have suffered, I thought that Hazard got a tick. Alaba played left back. It was a makeshift back four as well, wasn't it? In terms of Alaba, I don't think he's going to play left back too many times, but Mondi was injured, Marcelo was injured. Instead of Miguel Gutierrez, the youngster, Ancelotti chose to go with Alaba at left back, Nacho Militao, and you know, no Danny Carvajal, Andrea Zola on the bench, but Lucas Vasquez got the nod. So it was a makeshift back four. And I tipped that, I ticked Hazard, Benzema, clearly, obviously, and Bale, the front three. I thought Fede Valverde was in excellent form again. And just every now and then it gives you a reminder of actually he's genuinely top quality and, you know, a player that should be sharing the load with the other three that play every single game. There's no reason not to include him on a more regular basis. So he showed his quality. Luka Modric, again, I thought was excellent, showing no signs of getting old and slowing down. And for me, the one of the main ones was Nacho.
Yeah.
And the more I see of him now, Sergio Ramos has rubbed off on him. You know, all the attributes that Sergio Ramos, I'm not saying for one moment he's as good as Ramos, but in terms of spirit, mentality, and he's cynical. He loves defending. He loves getting stuck in. He's a good defender as well, wherever you play him. And his leadership qualities are something that could be more than useful this year for Real Madrid. So for him to score a goal as well, just tops it off.
So what is, you described their back four as makeshift, but I'm not sure what their best back four is. I think it might always look a bit makeshift. So what, if it's Champions League final tomorrow, the Clásico tomorrow, and everyone's fit, what's their back four?
I surely it has to be Carvajal, right back, when he's fit. That's the big issue. I would say Mundi at left back. So if you look at the game the other night, the two fullbacks are missing, the two first choice fullbacks. I would say Alaba as a left sided central defender. And then for me, I would go Nacho.
Yeah, above Militao.
Militao, you know, made the mistake. He played well at the end last season. It's a good choice to have. Militao, Nacho, you know, it's both are good. But at the moment, I would just go for Nacho because of the other qualities he brings, leadership qualities he can bring to the team.
If they were short of a player, I mean, they obviously don't need another attacker. They just need to use the attackers they've got, would be.
Yes.
Given that Alaba can play in midfield if you need him to, are they short of basically someone who could play centre-back or right-back?
Yeah, and maybe holding midfield.
Yeah, another, yeah.
But that's been going on for years now, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I'm surprised they haven't produced one. Mm. We'll come to Barcelona a bit later because there was one that came on for them last night. And I laughed because it was like watching Sergio Busquets coming on for Sergio Busquets. And I'm amazed that Real Madrid haven't been able to produce their own version of a holding midfield player. People will argue maybe it was Llorente and didn't get the opportunity. But he's gone on to be something else other than a holding midfield player. So that probably that's probably the biggest reason why he wasn't that identified as the player to share the load with Casemiro, to fit him. Casemiro's injured. So I think that would possibly be one. Top-heavy squad in terms of attacking players, isn't it? That's clear. So I do think you're right. If they haven't got faith in Odriozola, then they need to make that change. They're okay for left-backs, as I mentioned, the two they've already got. Alaba can play that, and Miguel Gutierrez is showed us last season he was a really promising young player. So I think, centre-back and holding midfield would be the one that I would be concerned. And I'd be concerned that Carvajal hasn't been fit for a long time now with different injuries.
Yeah. Where will they use Alaba? I mean, this has been Alaba's career, hasn't it? It's a blessing and a curse, versatility, isn't it? And a willingness. Seems to be a decent guy, doesn't he? He's prepared to play in different positions and work hard. So it makes perfect sense to sign him as a player, of course. Free, quality, experienced, top-level experience. Can play in a number of positions at which they're a little bit short. So is his Real Madrid career going to be there, or is he going to have a position?
No, I think it'd be useful to have that, to be able to be as flexible as he is and, you know, be versatile. But I do think they see him as the left-sided central defender. I think when you lose Varane, Ramos in one transfer window, we've seen Alaba, you know, perform regular for Bayern Munich. We know he's got the quality. So I think that's an obvious position for him to play. They don't need left-backs, so it'd be a waste to see him play there. They don't really need him in midfield, to be honest, unless he was to be the one to replace Casemiro. If he was missing, he could play that role. But I think they definitely see him as, I think it's one of the reasons they allowed Varane to leave, knowing that he was going to be coming in. So I do see him playing as a left-sided central defender now.
Explain Manu Garcia, Terry. I made a reference to it.
When I saw it, I saw he was released, and I heard one or two clubs he was going to or looking at.
Where's he gone? Cyprus or something? The old Manu Garcia, isn't it? Yeah.
And then when I saw it, I did check, obviously, before the game and thought, no, but is he still there? Is he back? Cucho Hernandez was another one. Wasn't sure. All of a sudden, I heard he scored a worldie for Watford, and I still thought he was at Granada. I'm sure I saw on Friday he was in the proposed lineup for Granada. Because I thought, oh, that's not a bad front three. And then hearing him score for Watford. So it's that time of the year, isn't it? But Manu Garcia, this one, he's clearly said he's a very young player. Ironic that he shares the name of a club legend. You know, he'll be remembered for long service, Manu Garcia, and for scoring a winning goal against Real Madrid a couple of seasons ago. So he's 20 years younger, I would say, not 10.
And obviously a more attacking player as well, isn't he? So, and he was good, wasn't he, this Manu Garcia from Sporting Gijón. Might be an initial loan, I can't remember, but anyway, there we are. So that's the other Manu Garcia. That's what I was going on about. Right, Osasuna 0, Espanyol 0. So Atleti fans and Barca fans, they're waiting. Osasuna, we're doing Osasuna 0, Espanyol 0. First of all, it wasn't terrible, actually. There were plenty of goal incidents, weren't there?
There should have been goals, shouldn't they? I think Rauta Thomas in particular had the best couple of chances, supplied well by Roulet, a number of familiar faces, which I said pre-season about Espanyol. It was a boring 0-0, and it's a decent result for a newly promoted team to travel away from home against opponents that are hard to beat, to keep a clean sheet, to get away with a point. It was a decent result, decent performance from Espanyol, but it did have chances at both ends of the pitch. So it wasn't a drab, boring 0-0.
Right, let's take a little break for podcast listeners. We'll see if we get any adverts. It's always an exciting point of the show, isn't it? To see if the audio boom manages to sell us any adverts. And we'll be back to do the rest of the games from Sunday in a moment. Right, welcome back. So then, the little Argentinian fella scored two goals. It was Correa, of course. Well, it was for Atleti anyway. So they beat Celta Vigo, Iago Aspas, with his first goal of the season from the penalty spot. Bit of aggro, a lot of aggro. At the end of the game, red cards for Hugo Mayo, Mario Hermoso. I didn't see your... I finally gave up and went to bed, Terry, so I haven't seen your analysis of this. So what did you make of Atleti? I mean, obviously a good result away from home at Celta Vigo.
Yeah, no, I thought they were good. I think considering the complications that clubs have pre-season, you look at the bench for Atleti where they didn't have Suarez. He was on the bench, Trippier on the bench, Rodrigo de Paul, no João Felix, who's injured. There was confusion over the starting lineup, who would be playing where. But again, once, no surprise, every player knew his job wherever he was playing. So unfamiliar wing backs in Seoul, who I didn't expect to see playing for Atletico Madrid again. To be honest, the lot of transfer speculation, not only Barcelona, but clubs in the Premier League. Marcos Llorente was the right sided wing back. And they controlled the game. I mean, Correa's two goals were sensational. And in my analysis last night on La Liga TV, Simeone said, if he has confidence, he can be an outstanding footballer. And I just wonder now his age, with being an important player last season, particularly the last third of the season, where his goals helped Atletico win the league, where it's just given him that confidence now to challenge João Felix, to challenge Luis Suarez, and to have that little bit of more belief in himself. Now, his career at Atletico, he's been in and out of the team. He's played different positions. He's always had a great character, great spirit. He's perhaps now we're seeing a fully confident, maybe a little bit more arrogant, which he needs, Angel Correa. His two goals were fantastic. In terms of clean strikes, they don't come any better. I mean, his first one, he drills it into the top corner. He's picking out the top corner and he hits it with the laces and no chance for the keeper. The second one, when he finishes it, first touch, second touch is to drill it towards the far post across the goalkeeper. It doesn't leave the grass. So he strikes it so well on both goals. And he just looks like a player now. He suddenly believes that he should be playing in his best position, which is a central position, central attacking position. And he was in fine form. So it took a good performance from Atletico. I thought they controlled the game. I think it was a harsh penalty that they conceded. And then within 5 minutes, Correa gets a second to give them back the lead. Celta played well, but they huffed and puffed up against an Atletico defence that, as I say, know all the fundamentals. Oblak was in trouble too much. Aspas had one chance, but I think they had two direct attempts on goal. One of those was a penalty. So it was a solid performance from Atletico. Three at the back system. And I thought they, for a first game of the season, I thought they played really well. Interesting to see Sal's celebrations, because he was involved heavily. He was the last player. He started the move, continued his run, then found Angel Correa with a pass. Correa controls it, drills it in. And Sal's pass from left to right to switch the play was brilliant. But as Correa scores, he sinks to his knees in sheer jubilation. So it clearly shows a sign that he's still, you know, cares deeply for the win, cares deeply to how much he plays for Atletico Madrid. So, you know, and that's playing in a position where he doesn't particularly like, doesn't want to play. So it was a good day's work from Atletico. Tough game and a good result.
And the red cards at the end, fair, I mean,
yeah, handbags, wasn't it? I mean, Mayo got a second yellow for swiping away Luis Suarez twice on two occasions, so I thought he deserved the second yellow. Hermoso was ridiculous, running across and shoving and practically throwing someone across the pitch. You're going to get in trouble for that. So it's Atletico were in full combat mode from day one to defend their title, and it's a good start for them. Tough game. But a good start. But they all played well. Lamar was involved in the build-up for the first goal. He was excellent. I think Sal Condogbia started the season as well. Might be one of these players that we do see at Atletico that Simeone takes his time to bed them in, and then out of nowhere they become an important player, such as Thomas Lamar did last season. And perhaps Jeffrey Condogbia, you know, will be the same again this season.
Which brings us on to Barcelona beating Real Sociedad. So the late twist before the game was this one, is that they'd managed to register players because Piqué had taken this massive wage cut. So obviously everyone is now talking about Piqué as a future president of Barcelona. You can see it, can't you?
It's a given.
Wants it, basically.
I think he does.
There are always, you know, in politics, there are various people who everyone thinks, oh, he'll do this at some point, but it doesn't always work out because you've got to get the timing right. You know, everything's got to come together at some point. Yeah. It's not necessarily a given, but he's got experience running his football club, hasn't he, Andorra, in the Spanish league system. He's obviously couldn't have done anything more.
Runs a Davis Cup, doesn't he?
Does he? Right.
Yeah.
is sort of Catalan through his heart with his sort of the politics side of it. It's given so much to Barcelona over the years, and now taking a pay cut to register players. La Liga were seemed to be annoyed, wasn't it, that Barcelona announced that they were registering the players, but the La Liga hadn't done it. They did. It's got sorted in the end. It's a bit weird, isn't it? But then football is weird because the players get paid too much. Because whenever I see a football club being bought or sold, I'm thinking, well, hang on, your players' wages are such a huge part of that. The players' wages is just extraordinary, isn't it? The level of it. Yes. We're to the point where Piqué basically had to take a pay cut to get Depay on the wage bill. And Eric Garcia as well. It's just extraordinary, isn't it? But that's where we are.
Other players doing likewise as well, aren't they? Jordi Alba.
Yeah. Well, he said in the interview, didn't he? Piqué said after the game that the other captains, so Jordi Alba, presumably Sergio Roberto, although he
gets.
Yeah, yeah. And the pressure's on, isn't it? It's very hard now, isn't it? Once Piqué's done it for you. Actually,
and then scores the first goal of the season.
Yeah.
it's must be so hard, mustn't it, for Koeman this week? You're trying to pick a team. I mean, Atletico, we've got players coming back from different tournaments. Likewise, Real Madrid, Sevilla had a COVID outbreak as well to add to all the complications. The big clubs have players playing in the Olympics. You know, Villarreal's Pau Torres came back from the Olympics and played against Chelsea. Pedri was playing, or Yazabel was playing. They're the three that you'd be most concerned about this year because they rule in the European Championships, then the Olympics, straight back into action. Koeman is sitting there and he's probably thinking, we've got Pedri coming back from the Olympics. He's got to start a new season. Unless he's, God knows it, but 73 games last season, now he's starting again. I don't know if I can play this player. I don't know if I can play that player. I don't know if they're going to be registered. What preparation would Barcelona have done this week? I can't even imagine. Because you could start some players and you think, right, we've done that. Now we need to do a plan B if you're not registered. You know, so it was kind of a surprise to see Eric Garcia playing in those circumstances, I have to be honest. Because I think Araujo was really good last season. And you know, I think he's been away to Copa America and he came back. But so whether that was one of the reasons why, but Eric Garcia has been away, you know, with the European Championships and the Olympics. So might be match fitness, might have thought, well, he's match fit, he's ready, he can go. And it's so complicated. So credit to Koeman to making them look as slick as they did for the majority of the game. The wheels come off towards the end momentarily. So that the same issues have got to be addressed this season defensively. They've got to be tighter, concentration, don't make mistakes. I thought Emerson, I think he's a good, really good player, suffered a little bit when he came in. He was at full, badly at full for the first goal. We didn't even realise the youngster, Labete, was drifting in behind him. They lost control of the game suddenly. Yazabel scored a wonderful free kick. And for a few minutes, you thought that the unlikely comeback was on because at 3-0, Koeman's making changes to rest players. And Aguasil was taking off his star players because he thought the game was beyond them. And then, lo and behold, two quick goals, and Barcelona were under pressure. But as you said in the intro, they still have really, really good footballers. And Braithwaite, he's not Luis Suarez, he's not Lionel Messi, he's not a superstar in terms of the big name. We've seen enough. I mean, probably people saw enough of him playing for Denmark in European Championships to think he's a good player. And if you're a good player, surrounded by very, very good players, and your job is to stick the ball in the back of the net, you've got a decent chance of getting good service. And he showed last night he could... I mean, if he plays the majority of the season as a striker for Barcelona, 20 goals isn't out of the question.
For Braithwaite. Yeah, and he did well on Sergio Roberto's goal as well, didn't he? Because
yes,
it was a good break, wasn't it?
Oh, brilliant. He did brilliant for that.
But he still needed... He needed to beat his man, essentially. Yeah. And he accelerated, didn't he? Got a decent ball in.
Immediate acceleration, made that goal. Because he had a lot of work to do and he's no other thought than... Immediately, the ball was coming to him to knock it past the defender and change pace and cross it for Sergio Roberto. I thought he was excellent. I mean, he's going to work, give everything he has in every single game, in every single minute he plays for Barcelona. And he is a good player. So, you know, the signs were excellent, I thought, last night for Barcelona up front. They were flexible, they rotated, they were, you know, quite willing to chop and change positions. Their work rate, them all three, was... outstanding. Griezmann was getting standing ovations when he was tackling back at right back and left back and chasing back to in midfield to make challenges from behind to break up the play, the pie, the flicks and the tricks, but he also worked hard as well. So I thought that the front three for Barcelona were excellent against a good team in Real Sociedad. That was a tricky game with all complications. That was a tricky start. It was one where they could easily have slipped up. And it wouldn't have been a surprise, would it? If we'd have seen Real Sociedad win that 2-1 last night, based on what's happened to Barcelona in the summer, then we wouldn't have, I think too many people would have said, cool, that's a shock result. Real Sociedad are good, Barcelona played well and deserved their win. The young midfielder I was talking about, Nico Gonzalez, I've heard quite a bit about him, that he is meant to be the replacement for Sergio Busquets. And I laughed. I sat there laughing because he came on. It was a doppelganger. It was just ridiculous. You know, he's, the way he received the ball in the half turn, the way he got himself out of trouble, the way he moved the ball on quickly, similar in terms of size and stuff, and just 19-year-old, so certainly a player. And again, Koeman leaving out some big names. Clearly, he doesn't want to be involved in the squad. Coutinho, Pjanic, and Titi. So it's he's certainly made it clear that he hopes that those three do find a new club before the season starts. And at the same time, he's willing to give young players opportunities again.
Yeah, but that doesn't solve problems. There's still a bit of magical thinking going on. Apparently, there's some talk of Pjanic having signed or being close to a deal, but there's no talk of... I'm not sure Coutinho's fit anyway, is he? He's certainly not registered, is he? But he's not going to magically go...
He's back playing again. Right. I think he played pre-season.
So, but he's not magically disappearing, is he, Coutinho? So
there's talk of an Italian club. I think Lazio might have been interested. There's been rumours of Liverpool getting back on the cheap. He's one of those players, same as Umtiti. They've shown their quality in the past. They've lost their way. Would there be a club willing to not pay the wages that Barcelona are paying them, but some of them? Will there be a manager, a coach around that thinks, you know, I can refurb that player. I can get him back to his somewhere near his best. It's a challenge, that. It's one that I would like to embrace as a coach, to be honest.
Yeah, but if I was your director of football or your president and you came to me and said, we're going to take Philip Coutinho because I think I can make him a player again, I'd say, no, you're not, because I'm not paying any of his 400 grand a week.
That's the deal, though. That is the deal. I mean, it's... If you could get for a quarter of his wages, Barcelona would probably be willing to do a deal.
Yeah. Well, literally,
he falls into a different category.
Yeah. What occurred to me with the PK thing, it just occurred to me again. Say someone like Steven Gerrard, the former Liverpool player, paid a lot of money in his career, manager of Rangers. If he goes to his chairman and says, I want to get this player in, he's a really good kid at Kilmarnock, Can I have the money? You must be sitting there thinking, you buy him, mate. You've got more money than the club's got. If you want to get him, go and buy him.
In American sports, the players in the past have, particularly basketball, the NFL, they do. I mean, Tom Brady was the best quarterback for years, and he's still. And he's one of the lowest paid in the league. Has been, not now, but has been in the past, because the salary cap, he was quite happy to win Super Bowls and have better teammates than fill up his bank account. I promise you he's not going to be scratching around for a job. And it happens in basketball as well. Five players starting, you know, the big hitters do sometimes ring up their mates, ask them if they fancy it, do a deal with a club. They drop their wages. They get involved with helping the club with the salary cap and surround themselves with another couple of superstar players and are happy to win the NBA.
Which makes sense, doesn't it? Yeah. Because as opposed to
bank account.
Yeah, as opposed to be, you know, you might be on 350,000 a week and I'll switch down to 150. Like you say, you're not going hungry, are you?
No.
I applaud PK for what he's done. I think he's done the right thing. And I think he will get his rewards. I'm not in heaven.
In different
ways. I
think
he'll get his reward in years to come. People will appreciate that. And I can't see how the money would make any difference. Talking of fans, of course, it was lovely to have fans back in. As I said, I was working on the Premier League. Now, Premier League went full house. It was brilliant having, I know some people have got views that it's too soon. Putting that aside, it was brilliant from a football point of view to have supporters in. The games were livelier again, I think. Little bit of extra fizz in a tackle, in a counter-attack, taking a gamble, all of that, I think, happened because you've got more supporters in the stadium. So Sevilla, of course, had the anthem that we hear sung. Yes. You fall in love with. The first time I saw Sevilla live, that's impressive. It is, and even everybody's socially distanced and spread out. So we're not quite there yet with La Liga, but it is still brilliant to have supporters in there. And it needed it that game because, obviously, the red card for Zidane early on was too big, and they conceded the penalty that the goalkeeper sent off. That was too big a step, wasn't it, for newly promoted Rio Ten to make the game competitive?
Yeah, and they did their best for the first half, didn't they? They did make it competitive. I thought it was a sloppy performance from Sevilla in the first half. I thought it was a red card. I thought it was as soon as it happened. I thought
he's not trying to win the ball. He just drags him back.
And been beaten by good first touch.
Yeah,
Midrissi, but then on it was always going to be tough. But I thought in the first half, I thought Lopetegui, and people would think I'm still banging on and criticising Lopetegui. I will, but first, because I expect more from them. You know, I do expect them to be genuine challengers for La Liga this season. There's no excuses. Fantastic squad in terms of quality and depth. In the first half, it's surprising he played three at the back. I didn't think particularly when you're down to 10 men and you've got one player up front, it was Randy Nateka, who was just chasing around on his own. Raya weren't getting out. And Sevilla still had three centre-backs marking him. The waste of players. So the two lateral centre-backs should have pushed on into midfield. And Koundé is normally good at that. You know, you would expect him to do that. Rekic on the other side, not so much. Diego Carlos could have been the one that stayed in the centre-back position. I didn't think the wing-backs, Navas and Acuna, pushed on enough either. So therefore, you still had a back five against a team down to 10 men with one striker who wasn't getting any service or support. So he rectified it in the second half, made the changes. They went back to a back four and they looked much better. I think the personnel helped as well. Papu Gomez came on as well. And of course, the obvious sub that made a difference was Eric Lamela. I was asked a question on La Liga TV where he will play. You know what? Over the last couple of seasons at Spurs, he's gone from being a winger to a player who can play in a more central role. And I think if he's going to have a chance of playing on a more regular basis, that's where he will have to play. So I kind of see him. He could be sort of a similarity to maybe Ever Banega, who played that number 10 position, because Lamela likes to get on the ball. His two goals, first one was a little bit fortunate, but he was involved in the build-up in that phase of play three or four times. So he likes to get on the ball. He's got an eye for a pass. He can beat a player. He can be physical. He worked hard. So on the second half showing where he came on and scored two goals, he looked like that's his position as opposed to playing wide, because last night they were missing Suso, no Campos. Sevilla had a COVID outbreak, a number of players missing, strange system. But it was an uphill battle for Raya once Lucas Zidane did pick up the red card.
He's yet another example of a player who could do with a good spell as a first team, first choice. I mean, you know, Spurs used him.
He played. Yeah.
Yeah, but not. He was never. He's never central to their requirements.
Starting
was
11, it? No.
Yeah.
So I think this could be a good transfer for everybody. Sevilla get a good player and a bit of cash, which means they might keep one or two of the others that they normally would sell on. Spurs get a young talent that hopefully materialises into a player that we hope he will be, particularly as a Spurs fan. So it could be a good transfer that works out well for everybody. But Lamela was good. Sevilla ended up being good. And a decent start for them with a number of players missing from this. They refused to name the players. They wanted to keep it private. But when there's suddenly five or six players missing, Rakitic, another one, we can kind of guess.
Sherlock Holmes comes into play. Yeah. Right, I think we'll leave it there, everybody. So thank you to the Patreons. If you're still listening, everybody, at this point, the listening figures drop off towards the end of a podcast. But thank you. If you're still here, join us on the Patreon, and we'll be doing exclusive Patreon content throughout the season as well. Patreon.com/LTEL. So tonight to come, Villarreal versus Granada, Elche versus Athletic. And we will be back with another regular podcast looking back on the next weekend, early part of next week. So we'll see you for that one. And thank you for your continued support.